Here's a question. Who would want to read a 250-page story written by a 5-year-old? No one, right? Well, not so fast. Author Emma Donoghue has managed to capture the impressions, the innocence, and the insights of a 5-year-old named Jack in her new novel, Room. The story begins in a dark place. Jack and his 27-year-old mom are trapped, held captive by Jack's father, and they've been there since Jack was born. The story, the unlikely story, which does have a happy ending, is getting terrific reviews. It's been shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Emma Donoghue is here in the studio with me. Emma Donoghue, good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to talk to you. You know, this book is both a very unusual story, but also a classic story. It's about how a mother can only protect a child so much from the outside world. Is that fair?
Absolutely. Although, you know, kidnapping and being held in somebody's converted shed is a fairly unusual situation, it's also got all those echoes of fairy tales like Rapunzel, Greek myths like Danae and Perseus. You know, the idea of the enclosed virgin, the locked away woman giving birth to the hero child, is actually really ancient. So I tried to make the story far more universal than the premise might suggest.
Although the voice is of the child sort of discovering all of a sudden that the objects that he sees, or, you know, the objects that are seen in reality don't really represent what that child would have ascribed the meaning to originally.
That's right. I mean, Jack is quite visually familiar with our world from TV, but he assumes that it's all just cartoons, you know, that Dora the Explorer and Obama are just all figments, just pleasant entertainments on his TV. So what he doesn't know is that there's a real world out there, because his ma doesn't want him to know that they are locked away from it.
And that the real world out there is as sinister as it could possibly be, being kidnapped.
Yes, that's right. And also, you know, Jack is living in this, you know, strange little simulacrum, in that it's a one-room world. But then, of course, in our outside world, there are many aspects of life that are rather unreal and virtual and inauthentic. So it's not like Room is all nasty and the outside world is wonderful. I tried to make it much more ambiguous than that.
Well, the allegorical power of this story is one thing, and I'll get to that in a second. How challenging was it to come up with Jack's voice?
Not very, because I had a 5-year-old in the house. You know, I drew on my son Finn very much. I studied him like an anthropologist. I would follow
him
around.
Thank you for that later, yeah.
I don't think the children of writers ever thank them for any of it later. But I wrote down all his strange turns of phrase. I paid unusual amounts of attention to his Lego building. And I tried to kind of find the bits of a 5-year-old's language that give it a lot of flavor, rather than actually representing how a 5-year-old speaks, which would drive any adult reader to dementia listening.
Well, having, you know, 5 kids of my own, you know, the way kids put the world together is both inventive and kind of wacky and you know, poetic sometimes. Did you find yourself envying the innocence and cluelessness at the same time of a 5-year-old?
I did. I think 5 is the perfect age to narrate a story this strange, because a 3-year-old wouldn't be able to describe it in full sentences, but an 8-year-old would be already a bit more like us. I think children of about 5 are truly strange. They're much more like Martians than like adult humans. And I thought...
Know a lot of Martians?
I thought a child like would have a fresh perspective on everything that adults can really not recapture. I can't remember myself at 5. It was really looking at my son at 5 that I found very helpful.
This is a book about unconditional love. Jack is utterly dependent on and completely is devoted to his mother, as any 5-year-old would be. Does a child fall out of that love when they discover the reality around them?
I think it's a more gradual process. I think children gradually sort of turn from their parents and towards the outside world, and that's how it should be. But it is a loss, of course. I think the mother-child relationship is this passionate love affair that's always unstable and asymmetrical. You know, the child is never wanting to hug you at the very same moment you're wanting to hug them. It's always a push-me-pull-you situation. And inevitably, the child starts turning towards the outside world, and the mother's job is to help him go, as it were.
How painful was it to write that transition? Because in a sense, the way you've chosen to put this book together, you're living it as you're writing it.
I didn't find it painful to write, because what's really painful to an author is finding themselves stuck in a book, or that the book won't come out the right way, or that they're uncertain about the way the book is to be structured. With this book, it was such a gift. The idea fell in my lap, and I knew from the start exactly how I wanted it to go and what it would cover and who the characters would be. So the writing was pure pleasure. It was just the research that was horrifying.
But is there pathos in the... I mean, because when a book is so easily sort of coming together... you're really sort of immersed in the reality of the experience. And I'm wondering if you felt some of the emotions that these characters feel as you were going through it. Because, you know, once you buy into the whole scenario, and I think the readers and the reviews suggest this, you're completely hooked.
Yes, there were moments I cried. But the research was worse because I was reading up on cases of, you know, children kept confined in hen houses and attics and basements and really horrifying situations, and children, you know, tied to chairs, this sort of thing. So that kind of storyline I just found unbearably painful, whereas I knew that the story in Room would actually be quite an uplifting story because Ma has somehow pulled off the magic trick of giving Jack a pretty good childhood, even in a room that measures 11 by 11 foot.
How does Jack understand that?
Well, like any child, he's moody, so he has times of thinking, you know, she's a big fat liar, you know. As she gradually explains the reality of the outside world to him, you know, he feels very pulled back and forward. And I think he only gradually figures out that she had her good reasons for lying. And in a way, every child goes through that when they discover, well, I shouldn't give away anything about the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus, but you know what I mean? There are stories we tell children that
go to our website,
turn out not to be too factual. They're more simplifications to help kids understand the world in a bearable way.
All of us as readers of Room, the little Jacks that we become going through this story, in the end, do we embrace the ambiguity of the outside world? It's not sinister, it's not completely good, or do we fear it in the end?
I don't think anybody would finish the book and actually wish that Jack and Ma had stayed. I think like any childhood space, we may be nostalgic about it, you know, if you ever visit your primary school again or your kindergarten, but you wouldn't actually wish to go back into those tiny little desks and chairs. So no, I think most readers will feel that this was an inevitable move towards freedom and towards the light, even if there are still many dragons to encounter along the way.
Leave it to Stephen King to write the book about wishing to be kidnapped, right?
That's right.
Emma Donahue, thanks so much. Author of the new novel, Room, which is shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
And good luck.
Thank you.
You can check out more from the book, Room. Read the first chapter on our website, thetakeaway.org.
And also on the website, it's the Takeaway's photo project on America's economic class. All this week, we've been talking about the middle class. No matter which class you're in, though, we want you to try something. Take a look at your surroundings. Take a picture of something, a photo that signifies what class you're in, lower, middle, upper, it doesn't matter. Then head to thetakeaway.org and upload it. This could be a picture of your credit card bill or a car or your
people
kids.
People aren't going to do that.
Well, redact the identifiable information, the condition of your lawn, anything, and then upload it at the takeaway.org for us.
We will keep the conversation going on America's economic classes all week. If you want to see what else we're working on, you can check out the blogs where producers post the stories we're following. Weigh in, join the conversation, click on blogs when you're at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.